Devotion is the practice of the spontaneous turning of the mind to God. That's what you want to write down. What is devotion, Aaron? You always talk about devotion being the most important practice. What is it? I don't get it. It is the spontaneous turning of the mind towards God, the pointing of the mind towards God. That's the maybe the simplest definition we can give. And there's many ways to do that, but that is what it is in its essence. And so we practice that because doing that will put a demand on the heart chakra. Yeah. And we've said here that, or we teach here that we activate the upper four spiritual chakras, really the upper three, because the crown's not really necessarily something we activate, but it's a response to our activation. But the heart, throat, and third eye chakras need to be activated by placing a demand on them to activate. And that's what all spiritual practice is for, right? Whether it's bhakti, whether it's karma yoga, whether it's jnana yoga, raja yoga, meditation, prayer, forgiveness, service to others. These are all just different ways of putting a demand on these chakras to activate and expand their energy field. So for the heart chakra, which is our primary concern here, in terms of fourth density, we put a demand on the heart chakra to activate through devotional practices. So if devotion is the spontaneous turning of the mind towards God, there's an important caveat we need to understand of how and why this will start to happen more naturally. And that is that the spontaneous turning of the mind to God can only happen if we genuinely find happiness in thoughts of God, right? When thinking about God is the happiest thought we could possibly think, then we're in a state of devotion, because who doesn't want to be happy? Who doesn't want to think about happy things? And when you have access to a thought like God, whatever that God idea is for you, and that thought will immediately spark a feeling of happiness, then the spontaneous turning of the mind to God will happen more and more. Some momentum, some inertia will be gathered to do that practice. So whether our turning of the mind towards God results in a feeling of peace, you know, assurance, well-being, or whether it results in total ecstasy, that is the practice of devotion. But the more often that we feel peace, or especially ecstasy of devotion, the more active our heart chakra is. So we can actually say that noticing how often our mind spontaneously turns towards God during the day is the most accurate barometer that we have for how active our green ray is. The more often we notice the mind is turning towards God, the more active the green ray must be, because only the green ray turns towards God in love. The lower three chakras, when left by themselves without the green ray, will never turn towards God. In fact, they'll always be in a state of separation from God. They'll always fear God. They'll always feel unworthy of God, and so forth. So only the heart chakra activates the ability of the mind to think about God. You guys tracking with that? So the amount of times our mind turns towards God, or we can even just say sees God in something, that's also a kind of turning for the mind. The amount of times and the speed at which that is happening is the direct litmus of how open the green ray is. The more open it is, the more we'll see God and turn towards thoughts about God and feel bliss and feel happiness. So that's why we don't make bliss some kind of pedestalized idol to be worshipped or chased or sought after, right? Bliss is the product of being in loving relationship, loving God, being devoted to God. And so this is what bhakti yoga, the tradition of bhakti yoga, essentially teaches. But bhakti yoga, if you study the literature of bhakti yoga, it will teach that devotion is the highest form of spiritual practice, which really upsets the non-dualists, right? Devotion is the highest spiritual practice because, as Ramana Maharshi said, one cannot merge with the self permanently without an all-consuming love for the self. Ramana Maharshi said that. The only power that can turn the mind or cause the mind to sink into the heart is love, Ramana said. So we must have an all-consuming love of rapt devotion to the one true self that we are. And so Bhakti Yoga teaches that it is said that God will easily grant liberation to any sincere seeker, but will only grant devotion to the rarest of seekers. And I really love that distinction, because we can see that, yeah, you could through studying non-duality, let's say, and practicing non-duality, there's nobody here, nothing exists, nothing is real, it's all an illusion, ignore it, it's all fake, it's all a mind projection. You could do that to the point where you literally numb yourself to reality and nothing feels real to you anymore. And so you don't suffer anymore. You're just kind of in a state of neutrality or emptiness. And hey, much better than suffering, for sure, right? I'll take some of that when offered suffering as an alternative. But is that the highest state that's available? Is that really what we're longing for? I would say that what we really long for is to experience bliss and happiness and joy, right? As a normal abiding state. So this is where non-duality has some problems inherent in it if it's used as a standalone practice. I love non-duality. I've studied thousands of hours of non-duality and benefited tremendously from it. But it's, again, it's only one polarity of accessing the divine. It's the masculine sort of approach to accessing the divine. And there's also a feminine approach to accessing the divine, meaning there is a way to experience, to actually attain, if we can use that word loosely, permanent God union without ever needing a concept of non-duality. And that's the practice of devotion. If you read the book, Lakshmana Swami's book, No Mind, I Am the Self. That's what it's called. He describes Lakshmana Swami's devotion to one of his disciples, a woman named Sarada. And Sarada achieved self-realization through pure devotion to Lakshmana Swami. And eventually that pure devotion, where she couldn't even stand to be away from him for a second and would cry with love and bliss thinking about him all day, She reached the state of God union where her devotion to Lakshmana was no longer necessary and all appeared to her as the one true self. And it's an amazing story to read about the way that state of awareness illuminated for her, because it had nothing to do with spiritual concepts. She didn't spend any time reading the Upanishads or the Vedas, but just devoting her heart and love. So I say, why don't we use both approaches towards divine union? The masculine and the feminine. Because the problem is when we just use the masculine, it's like the best case scenario for non-duality alone is that you basically contemplate yourself into a void state. You contemplate the nature of the universe as emptiness until basically nothing has meaning outside of consciousness and nothing has any real existence for the mind anymore. And so it just can't inspire suffering. So in my mind, it's kind of akin to a type of spiritual frontal lobotomy. You guys know what a frontal lobotomy is? That horrible procedure that Western medicine practiced way back in the 40s and 50s on anyone who had a mental imbalance. They would basically take them into an operating room and stab a hole through part of their brain so that it would turn off the center that has feelings about things. And so they just kind of exist in this sort of state, you know, neutral, no real thought activity, no joy, no happiness, but hey, at least they're not suffering. And eventually that practice was banned and made illegal because it was a kind of cruel torture and abuse to people. So like just practicing non-duality with no attempt to use the heart to reach God is like that in my estimation. Yeah, it'll stop suffering, but it won't let you experience the endless planes of God bliss and joy and happiness that are available in fourth density consciousness. It's like it can scrub the mind of third density consciousness, but it can't ascend to the fourth without love. Why? Because love is the fourth density. So how do you think you're going to get there without love? Good luck. So we want to use devotion as the primary vehicle and sure, integrate non-dual understanding into that all you want, but where we can get off track is when we think that bhakti devotion is inherently dualistic. You'll hear a lot of non-dualists say that. And it's like, oh, look at you projecting duality onto devotion. Look at you seeing separateness in reality. The true sign of a realized being is that they will see no duality in anything, no separateness in anything. So a realized master would never say that devotion is inherently a dualistic practice. They might be able to see in a devotee of bhakti that they're sort of taking it the wrong way and making it very dualistic. And that can happen when people are like worshiping idols on their altar and trying to devote themselves to an object. That'll take you only so far, and then you have to begin releasing the objects of your devotion and making your devotion sort of non-physical, right? To the essence of the divine rather than a form of the divine. But that doesn't mean that devotion is inherently dualistic. In fact, devotion is the gradual process of destroying duality through love, through devotion. And so there is a quote that I absolutely love from Nisargadatta's guru. I think this is just one of the most beautiful passages written on the practice of devotion. He called it devotion after liberation. When the state of the totality of Brahman is attained, Brahman is the self in Hinduism, one thinks that devotion with its inherent duality is no longer needed. One should not suffer from the pride of having achieved any such state. When one says that when liberation is attained, devotion does not remain, this is the pride of knowledge. Please, may you give me devotion to you. You may ask me, why are you requesting devotion when I have given you liberation, which is attainable only after millions of births? And I will say that for me to be deprived of devotion to God is the greatest hindrance. So please give me that devotion which is beyond liberation. So devotion is a practice that takes you beyond just not suffering, but actually takes you into joy, bliss, ecstasy, which is always available. And then he goes on to say, I do not want liberation, which is dry and tasteless. Liberation is possible by the blessing of the Sadguru, and it is necessary to have the understanding of reality. But please give me devotion to you. Give me the worship of you, which is superior to liberation. Wow, non-dualists won't like that, will they? Unfathomable is the greatness of your devotion. He who becomes one with you holds all of your glory. Devotion contains within itself liberation. That's the key statement. By devotion, the liberation becomes sanctified. Even if I will gain liberation, I desire only to be your devotee. What a statement on the power of devotion, huh? So when he said, inherent in devotion is liberation, can we say the same of liberation? Inherent in liberation is devotion? Not necessarily. It usually is, but not always. Many of these teachers have that kind of dry, tasteless energy that Siddha Rameshwar is discussing, in that it's lacking that sweetness of the divine. And that sweetness is what we experience constantly in a fourth density state. And that's, it's important because that's what grounds us in it. To actually feel happiness is what grounds you in a fourth density state, because once the mind is experiencing happiness on a regular basis, on a sustained level, it doesn't want to go out in search of happiness anymore. It actually begins to realize that it's going out in search of happiness is why it's suffering. Love teaches that to the mind. And so the mind gradually is more and more satisfied to just rest in the heart. And so that's how we quiet the mind and bring it into devotion to the heart, by just repeatedly, daily, day by day, letting it taste the sweetness of love. So I want to give you guys three different ways to practice devotion. There's sort of three different ways we can quantify this practice, and many of them we talk about all the time here, two of the three at least. The first way of practicing devotion is what we've called practicing the presence or practicing oneness. And this is what we began with, saying, turning the mind, or the mind spontaneously turning towards God, remembering that God is love, and then feeling the presence of love right here and now. That's practicing the presence, practicing oneness. When you're in love, you're in the state of oneness. So we can, with, you know, we could use the word effort. Let's just call it effort, because that's how it feels in the beginning. It may take some effort to train the mind to turn towards God, to think about God during the day. But then over time, we notice that there's a momentum gained and the mind starts thinking about God all on its own. We're just remembering God all day long, right? Out and about, on a walk, writing emails, in conversation, the thought of God just comes into our mind, and then our state of being is uplifted. So as we said a minute ago, this is actually the closest barometer that we probably have, or that I know of, to how active is my green ray. Well, how often do you think about love? How often are you being loving? That's the sure indication. The response you feel in your state of being to thinking of God, thinking of love, is directly proportionate to the size and the strength of your God idea. So what we're really doing, in putting this another way, is we're trying to increase and expand our God idea. The greater your God idea is, the more expansive, the more magnificent, the more brilliant your thought of God is, the more that love, that joy, that peace, that ecstasy, that bliss will happen in response to it. So if you don't feel these responses to any degree when you try to think about God or think about love, that's probably a sign that you just need to increase the size and strength of your God idea. And this is where we can rely on the masculine, right? This is where the masculine is very helpful and effective, is spend time every day contemplating the majesty of the universe, right? Study some metaphysics, study some sacred geometry, study some science of astronomy or astrology, and start to take into your mind the grandness of this incredible, incomprehensibly intelligent, beautiful universe that we live in. Can you see the intelligence in a blade of grass? You know, can you expand out your awareness of the magnificence of creation? That to me is the number one way to expand your God idea. Because when you start seeing God in creation, you start seeing God's intelligence made manifest, God's creativity, God's beauty being expressed through creation, you just can't help be in awe of it. And then when you think about God, oh, you're just overwhelmed by the bigness, the vastness, the epicness of this universe we live in. And more you start to see, I'm already walking in a perfect universe here and now. I'm already living in the perfect world that God has created. Because now you're seeing it, you're looking for it, you're actually aware of it, right? Activating that awareness. So build the size and strength of your God idea and watch your devotion exponentially begin to increase. Happiness flows in direct proportion to the size of our God idea. And so increasing your awareness of God is devotion, isn't it? So that's the number one way, or let's say the first way, not the number one way. Number one on this list of three is practicing that presence, practicing oneness like that. Turn the mind towards God and just feel the presence of God happening inside of you. Now, the second point, this is the one we've been really hammering lately. Being in loving relationship is another way to practice devotion. We can say who you are being in relationship is your level of devotion, right? You can't tell me you're devoted to God and then go be an asshole to God's children, go be putting everyone out of your heart, right? Go attack people and judge people. This is what A Course in Miracles teaches, right? Here is the symbol of your duality in your perception, is that you think God is one thing and creation another. And so you judge and hate and resist and try to control God's creation and then say, oh, but I love you, God. No, you don't. Because if you truly loved God, you would see God. So you may love a conceptual framework your mind has made about God. God serves me and makes me happy, but God also makes me better than others who are less spiritual than me and blah, 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 blah. So if we're not being loving, we have no real awareness of the Creator, do we? So practicing being in loving relationship is, I would probably say, the most important or powerful way to practice devotion because of how all-encompassing it is, right? Relationship is happening everywhere. Relationship is the invisible reality of creation. So the more aware you are, the more you're tuning in to your relationships, my relationship to my thoughts, my relationship to my feelings, my relationship to others. The more you're tuning into that, the more aware you are of God, of love, and the more that love will be outpictured in your state of being. When you're devoted to God, you will demonstrate your devotion by loving others, by loving everything. This is why Jesus said, don't call me Lord, Lord, and then, you know, judge the cripple and the beggar and the sinner. Jesus said, when you didn't love the least of these, you didn't love me. Because Jesus had this vision of absolute oneness with all living beings. So Jesus was like, don't call me Lord and then be a jerk to these people. You don't love me if you don't love them. The barometer of your love for me is represented in how much you love them. So to love God's creation is to love God. To see the beloved everywhere is devotion. And when you see the beloved everywhere, naturally you'll be in loving relationship. So we could reverse engineer it by saying, I don't see the beloved everywhere yet. I'm seeing a lot of separation. How do I come to see my beloved in everything? Practice being in loving relationship, right? Notice where you're not being loving and then say, oh, please forgive me for my selfishness. I love you, thank you. And you just put a loving thought towards that relationship. Put a loving intention towards that relationship. So that's number two, being in loving relationship. Number three, and this is really more of a way to think about or picture devotion, is to notice when we're in giving and receiving versus when we're in taking and keeping. Taking and keeping is the thought system of separation. Giving and receiving is the thought system of unity. Yeah? So we have to notice when we're in that mode. And before we came to a real spiritual path, most of us, all of us, we were in taking and keeping probably 90% of the time. And this is very, very subtle, right? You may not notice that you're in taking and keeping if you're not looking for it, but it's just that basic urge to get something. I'm unhappy, I wanna get happiness from something. So we have our little vices. We use food to get happiness. When we're in conversation with someone, we're not really listening to them. We're just trying to tell them everything we think and feel so that we feel heard. We're taking and keeping, right? We're more interested in what we have to say than what they have to say. These are the subtle ways we notice that we're in that thought system. And when we put it like this, when we frame it like this, taking and keeping or giving and receiving, you're either in one state or the other state. Well, then it becomes really easy to ask yourself the question, am I in giving and receiving right now? Or am I in taking and keeping? And there's no guilt in it, right? This is what the ego is doing all by itself. No one's really doing it, but you have to notice what state you're shifting into if you're going to correct that state and upgrade it to a fourth density one, yeah? So keeping is the opposite of giving. To not give is to keep. And then taking is the opposite of receiving. So what does giving imply when we're in the mode of giving? We're looking to who can I give today? Who can I bless? Who can I love and serve today? It implies that we're aware of our abundance, doesn't it? And maybe the easiest analogy to see this fact is, let's suppose you had a magical, you know, machine or whatever that could print or create infinite gold coins, literally a coin made of pure gold. You had a machine that could just spit out gold coins forever, as many as you want. You can turn it off or turn it on anytime you want. Now, if you had such a machine, would you ever see a reason to go take gold coins from someone else? I bet you wouldn't. There'd be literally no reason to take gold coins from anyone else when you have an infinite supply of them already. Only if you believe in lack and scarcity can even the concept of taking from another arise in the mind? The mind isn't even capable of thinking of lack when it is aware of infinite abundance. So if you had a gold coin machine that could print forever, you'd actually become very generous, wouldn't you? You'd be delving out coins to everybody to share in your wealth because you've got no lack. So what needs do you have left to keep and take, right? So it's like when we're in giving and receiving, we are established in the awareness of abundance, right? We are practicing the awareness of abundance, knowing that there is no lack in God and none in me. So I'm only here to give and to receive. I'm only here to be in the flow of cooperation in this universe where all needs are met permanently. And if I move into taking and keeping, I am therefore implying that lack exists, aren't I? If I have a desire to take, what's the prerequisite belief before I can desire to take from another? I have to believe that there's scarcity. I have to believe that I'm lacking or can be lacking to get into taking and keeping. So we immediately see another world when we move into that state, don't we? We instantly see a universe of separation and fear. And likewise, when we move into the flow of giving and receiving, we realize, oh, it's all oneness. There's no separation. There's no unmet needs. I can just either be in that flow or I can exclude myself from that flow. And if I exclude myself from the endless flow of giving and receiving, yeah, it's definitely going to feel like I've got some unmet needs, isn't it? Why? Because all needs are met in giving and receiving. So if I'm in taking and keeping, I'm automatically implying that all my needs are unmet, right? It's a direct contradiction. So if you're more of a conceptually minded person, you can use this framework to help you be more aware of your state of being. Am I being in loving relationship? Well, am I giving and receiving? Now, we talk about giving a lot, but we also need to understand receiving. Receiving is equally as important as giving because it's really the same thing. We're telling God, your creation is perfect. Your creation is innocent and all that you make is good. So please forgive me for judging your perfect creation as flawed or evil or sinful. Forgive me, Father. And that is a gift we give to God. And what does God give back to us? A feeling of peace. Healing happens. A miracle happens. A shift in our state of being happens. And that's what we receive. So can you see how when we practice spiritual virtues, we receive just as we give? They're simultaneous, a simultaneous exchange. So am I letting myself receive the benevolence of the universe? Am I letting myself receive the goodness? Well, how do we do that? Gratitude, right? Gratitude is the state of receiving, isn't it? When I'm in a state of gratitude, I'm saying, oh, arms open wide, universe, bestow on me whatever gifts you want to give. I'm all yours. And letting someone else give to you is also an act of love. How many of you have tried to give a gift to a friend? And they're like, oh, no, I can't accept that. No, please take it yourself. I don't want it. I can't take that. And you're like, yo, man, like, I want to bless you. Why are you cutting me off from blessing you? It's a gift you give to me to just say, oh, wow, what a blessing. Thank you so much. This is amazing. I appreciate it so much. That's the gift I want from you. So the giving and receiving has to be mutual. If one feels unworthy of the gift, then the giving can't happen either. So if the receiver cuts themselves off, they cut off the giver. So we also have to feel worthy of God's universe. We have to feel worthy of the perfection of God's kingdom here and now and let ourselves receive it. Let ourselves be grateful always for the perfection of reality and to say yes to what reality does, to say yes to the present moment. That's me being in a state of receiving. If I'm resisting what the present moment is offering me, I'm definitely not in receiving, am I? So we see there how giving and receiving are, although they appear to be different, are really the same state. So we have to just say, not only am I giving today, but also am I receiving today? Am I receiving the love of the universe for me? Am I receiving the love of others when others want to love me? Am I open to that, seeing that as a gift to them? You know, this is kingdom consciousness when we realize giving and receiving are the same. We look for opportunities to receive from God as much as we look for opportunities to give to God. So if you were taking notes, which I hope you were, number one is practicing the presence, the spontaneous turning of the mind to God, the size and strength of our God idea, building that, expanding that. That's the first way to practice devotion. Number two, loving relationship, right? Practicing being always in a loving relationship to everything is number two. And then what was three? Notice when we're in giving and receiving versus taking and keeping. And we never care that we're in taking and keeping. Just to close the loop on that. We don't care. We don't feel guilty. We don't go, oh no, look at me. There I go again. I'm not in devotion. We have no need to do that stuff. We just say, oh, shift back to giving and receiving. Just whoops, little misdirection is all we need. It's just a reminder, right? Of, are you noticing your state of being? Are you noticing what mode you're operating from? The more you look for it, the more you're going to notice it. And the more you notice it, the more you're going to be in your chosen state of being, aren't you? And that's what devotion does.